It's Magic at the Movies. I am at the press junket at the moment for The Princess and the Frog, and sitting in front of me is one of the world's greatest animators. And you shouldn't feel embarrassed by that, because the amount of work you've done is phenomenal. It's Andreas Deja. Welcome to Magic.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is incredible, the amount of work that you've done.
Well, it'll be this coming August where I'll be there for 30 years. So it just adds up, you know. You're at the studio for so long, you have a lot of stuff to show for, you know.
And what was the first film you started on?
The very first one was called The Black Cauldron. That was way back. And that was interesting because I had a chance to work with Tim Burton for a whole year. He was then just right out of art school, like me. And they looked at Tim Burton's work and liked it. Because it was different, and they looked at my work and liked it because it looked very Disney. So we both shared an office for a whole year.
That must be fascinating.
It was great. Tim was fantastic. He wasn't famous then, of course. That came later. But he was a great guy to work with, and we just filled storyboards with ideas and designs for The Black Cauldron.
Because you did Gergi, wasn't it?
No, I did The Boy and the Girl. They were called Taran and Arlonwy. And I also did some of the witches and helped with the design of all of them, basically, as Tim did. But it didn't really adapt to or adopted Tim's style, because even though they wanted maybe to try something different, it was just a little bit too different what Tim did. But he did fantastic work on the movie. I mean, it was just awesome.
As did you. And then fast forward, you know, the 30 years, and you're now doing The Princess and the Frog, and your main character in this one is Mama Odie.
That's right. Correct? I animated Mama Odie and her snake Juju. Those two.
And where did you get the inspiration for those characters?
It's a variety of inspirations, I would think. First of all, the voice is always the springboard, you know, for your character. And that was Jennifer Lewis. She made that voice up. She doesn't talk like this normally, you know. So she came up with this little old lady with no teeth, you know, and had a lot of old, but still the bones are still going, you know. So she brought a lot to it. In terms of other inspirations, I've been thinking lately, my aunt, one of my aunts looks just a little bit like Mama Odie. She also had that huggable quality, and she has an eccentric sense of humor. Haven't told her yet, you know, I wonder what she will think. But then a third influence, a bit more definite, would be the British character actress Margaret Rutherford, who did Miss Marple movies for MGM in the early 60s here. And as a kid growing up, I always loved those movies because of her. Because she has a way of talking and to the inspector, you know, and she has a face like nobody else. And I've always been fascinated by that, even way back freeze framing, those expressions. And then years later, wouldn't you know, I could use some of those observations in Mama Odie.
See, now, whenever I've tried to do any drawings of which are just rubbish, but I always start at the eyes. That's always my starting point. I wonder where do you start? Is it the mouth? Is it the expression?
It's basically a circle where you. I actually have a sketch pad here.
Okay. We there we go. You get to see the master at work.
Hear the master at work, I guess.
This works brilliantly on radio, I must say. It's
animation perfect vehicle for visual explanation. No, we really start with a circle, basically to say that's where the head is going to be. You know. So this is kind of a close-up that I'm laying out here. And then so maybe a center line to show where she's looking. So she's going to look toward the left, screen left. And then I just start with details. You know, she's got this sort of little nose. And then because she doesn't have eyes, I then just block in her glasses, her dark glasses. And I thought originally that would be a problem because, you know, the audience always looks at character's eyes, you know, and that's how you show expression and mood changes. And how would I do that, you know, without eyes? But over the glasses are these wrinkly eyebrows, and those are flexible, and I can bring them down for an angry expression or up when she's happy. So that kind of saved me, you know, that these wrinkles, you know, over her glasses. And then the rest is just all about showing age and, you know, sort of wrinkles wherever they fit graphically. And what I had a lot of fun with was this extra loose flesh under, sort of around her neck, under her jaw. I went a little further with it than I normally would have done, just to show that this is old, loose flesh.
It's funny because I've been doing that recently, going a bit looser underneath the
chin. Well, hold still, hang on. It's going to help me with my drawing.
Yeah.
And then on her head, she basically has this wrap, because I thought the old lady probably has no more hair left at all. So for dignity's sake, you know, she has this towel or scarf or that kind of a thing over.
It is, I must explain to our listeners, it is incredible to see it taking shape in front of your eyes, because you're so used to seeing the finished character, but to actually see how it's created and the starting blocks, it is quite fascinating. But one of the other things that I know that you must be very proud of at the moment, and that's that you're the head honcho when it comes to Mickey Mouse now as well.
Oh yeah, I've had a chance to do Mickey Mouse a few times over the years. Starting way back, we did a film called The Prince and the Pauper, and then I did Mickey also in a few scenes in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, because he has a cameo a role in that. And then we did a film, a short film, a few years ago called Runaway Brain, where Mickey turns into a Frankenstein monster, and that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that.
I remember the Disney plush toy of that, actually. I think I've still got it somewhere.
Yeah, I think it took some people by surprise that they saw Mickey as a monster, because he's like the ultimate good Disney character. Mm-hmm. But by the end of the short, he's turning back into the old Mickey, so no harm done.
But do you find it a responsibility to do him, or is it just the most incredible honor?
It's kind of both. When I started on Mickey Mouse, on my first scenes way back, I wanted to do a really good Mickey. You know, there are so many different versions of Mickey in comic strips and merchandising. Even throughout the short films, he changes. And I wanted to do the best one possible. So I went to the archives, the animation archives, and looked at the work from the late 30s and early 40s in those short films, between The Brave Little Taylor, Fantasia, you know, those years, where he looked absolutely perfect. Like the most appealing, the most flexible, the most expressive. So I learned all about the subtleties, how they drew hands, you know, these cartoon hands, and gave it meaning, and his shoes, and it's all in the subtleties about Mickey, you know.
Oh, it's so fantastic to hear you talking about it, and thank you so much for joining us on Magic as well today, and it has been a great pleasure. Hopefully one day I'll get to be one of your voices, and you'll be able to draw me, but for now, Andreas, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.